So, David, did you see this? Donald Trump was asked by Jim Cramer about crypto this week. Should we just play the clip?
Yeah, absolutely.
Your embrace of crypto, very different from the previous administration. Strategic petroleum reserve-like for crypto?
Yeah, I think so. We're going to do something great with crypto because we don't want China or anybody else, not just China, but others are embracing it, and we want to be the head. We're going to be ahead of AI. We're going to be way ahead of AI, and we've got to produce tremendous amounts of electricity. You know that it's unbelievable when you think that we need more than twice what we already have. If you think that's pretty for a specific industry, but we'll be able to do it. We have Lee Zeldin in charge of the environment. He's going to be giving us very strong approvals, I think, and he's going to make sure everything's good and clean and proper, but he's going to give us very fast approvals.
There you go. Donald Trump saying he will be doing something great
full
with crypto.
Send.
It's for him.
Donald Trump, I don't even know if he knows what accelerationism is, but he's embodying it.
Oh, that's
and
exactly
he's leaning
what I was going to say.
It's just full. Let's turn it up to 11.
Yeah, it's accelerationist, kind of like what are the accelerationist tech? AI, energy, and crypto. Boom, all three. We're going to be great. We're going to exceed China. That's his message today. So
it is. I will admit, it is pretty refreshing.
Wow. Okay. Well, we are in the second week of December. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up.
In the world of politics, crypto and AI has gotten a czar. Who is he? And will he be all in on crypto?
We'll
figure that out. You have heard him on this podcast before. We have clipped some of his content before. Also, Liquidation Thursday, right after we finished recording the weekly roll-up last Thursday, crypto prices tanked. Record liquidations in crypto as leverage washes out of the market. But we're back.
Leverage is back
on the menu. The degens are gambling. We're not stopping here. Ethereum is getting record ETF flows. So we'll talk about that, painting some pretty big numbers. And then also is the Ethereum Layer 1 finally getting a scaling upgrade. There are some murmurings in the EF camp and in the L1 capacity world. We're going to talk about that. A bunch of tokens launches this week. Move, ME, Magic Eden, and Pengu, and MicroStrategy is expected to enter the QQQ, and how will that change crypto's market structure? These are the subjects, but there's like 20 more that we're going to get into as well throughout this episode. But first, before we get to all of those, a message from our friends and sponsors over at DYDX, which is introducing its whole new era. Unlimited, DYDX Unlimited, removes limits on what and how you can trade with perps and providing liquidity to. There are instant market listings with DYDX Unlimited, hence the unlimited. Create and trade any market instantly with liquidity. Imagine launching a perpetuals future market for a new token within minutes and having liquidity ready to go from day one. This is what DYDX Unlimited does. There's also Mega Vault, which lets you earn yield on your USDC without having to place a trade, spitting out some of the highest APRs in crypto. There is a link in the show notes.
49% yield here for the Mega Vault.
That's pretty juicy today. Measured today. We'll see. We'll check back in next week and see what it's at next week. Bankless.cc/DYDX-unlimited. There is a link in the show notes so you can position your USDC and receive yield and do other things that DYDX offers.
I was pretty bullish when we talked to Antonio on Twitter a couple weeks ago on DYDX Unlimited, particularly this like permissionless perps. Like imagine AI agents creating a permissionless perps.
Oh, no. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Oh, you're ready for it. let's talk about the market price this week. We got Bitcoin and another week, not an all-time high, can't say that, but we are above 100K, aren't we, David? What are the numbers on the week?
Even with the nuking that we all experienced last week, Bitcoin is up 0.2% on the week.
Point
we are still
two. Not two.
We
are point two.
Not two. Not okay. two. Point two. We are green on the week.
All right.
Call it flat. Start of the week, 101,400. Ending the week, 101,600. Actually, it's up $100 since I brought these numbers in. So maybe we're up 0.4.
Actually, this feels really good because on Thursday, as you mentioned, we got a massive liquidation. This was a sell-off.
Big.
Some people were saying it was over, David, at that point in time. Not me.
First cyclers.
Not me. I think it's a lot of the people that are looking in on crypto. We're I told you. You hit 100K.
Told you it's a scam.
Dropped down to 20. You got scammed.
Bitcoin always crashes, idiots.
Anyway, that's a pretty steep candle here. Look at this. We go from 102K to 92,
and then we wicked back up. Yeah,
that's like a 10K drop.
Do you remember May of 2021, after ETH ran from 1,000 to 4,000, Bitcoin did something similar.
Yeah.
Liquidity just dropped out of the market, and ETH crashed from like $4,100 down to like $2,300 and liquidity just ran away from the market. The floor just fell out of the entire market. Now, was that the fair price for Ether? Was that a justified crash? Well, in the time, in the narrow time frames, yes, liquidity couldn't enter the market that fast. In the zoomed out time frames, no, because ETH just went back up to $4,000, took it half a year to do that. But it, just a reminder, liquidity can just flee this market so fast. And this is why we can go and drop. This is a small drop in the grand scheme of things, but it is a reminder that how fast liquidity can change in this market. And you can make very big movements very, very quickly, which is why so many people got liquidated.
Yeah, it's healthy too. I mean, this kind of thing needs to happen. We're kind of like, you know, cleaning up all the scraps here. But it's like, I guess I was expecting after that kind of a liquidation, a 10K drop in Bitcoin price, and the rest of the market, of course, followed suit. I was expecting a longer duration. The fact that we are fully recovered now, David, tells you that we are in a bull market.
We are bullish. A mega bull market. People are bidding.
That kind of liquidation doesn't tend to recover so quickly. But give us the stats on the liquidation. Look at this chart we're looking at.
Yeah.
What's this?
$1.1 billion in liquidations across centralized exchanges. That's the largest daily crypto liquidation since December of 2021, which is when the market started to turn. $815 million liquidations came from long positions. $280 million came from short positions, which I don't know how they
did
that.
Who's shorting this?
I don't know. I don't know why anyone would short crypto. I do not know. And with that market turbulence behind us, people are still very bullish. Not just crypto people, but also Tom Lee. Tom Lee went on CNBC earlier this week predicting $250,000 Bitcoin. Let's go ahead and listen to Tom Lee.
How much of what we're seeing, maybe even a little bit today, is there's been such a regulatory overhang on a lot of these names under the current administration. Now you have a new FTC chairperson. Is that playing a role in any respect to this? Because Dan Ives put out a note today, said Christmas comes early with the new head of the FTC for tech.
It's probably the best way to sort of measure this is what Bitcoin's doing. Because Bitcoin faced enormous regulatory burdens over the last few years. And now we have a White House that's embracing digital assets, a new SEC chairman, FTC chairman, a new commerce secretary. I think these are actually being viewed as pro-business, reviving animal spirits. But I think a good proxy is watching Bitcoin.
All right, now I'm going to have to pin you to a target again on Bitcoin, because, I mean, you've been among the most optimistic and outspoken about it for years, to be quite honest. So here we are above 100,000. What's a legit target for 2025 for Bitcoin?
We think it's going to follow a similar halving cycle that we've seen in the past that would imply something around 250,000 for Bitcoin in 2025. And on top of that, we have a Trump put because Bitcoin is potentially a strategic reserve asset for the...
There it is. 250K is his base target, plus the Trump put on top of that. I got to say, Tom Lee has totally called this in the back half, last half part of the year. We had him on in August. You remember this was right after the kind of the yen like trade kind of dip where the stock market like plunged and everyone was talking about recession worries and all of these things. And he was like, not a recession. We're still in a bull market. You're going to see higher highs in NASDAQ, S&P, and then also and most especially crypto. So Tom's been right on in kind of the last quarter of this year. On the other side of that, though, is the Microsoft board. You'll recall, David, we were talking about the last couple of weeks. They had the opportunity to vote, shareholders, that is, of Microsoft, on whether to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet. So
Obviously, they did it, right? Why wouldn't they do it? They told what was the vote? Well, they put it on the balance sheet, right?
Big company, a lot of cash reserves. What are you going to do with all that cash? Like, would you buy back your shares? Or you do what Michael Saylor's doing. It's working for him. That vote got turned down, and not just by a little bit. Only less than 1% of Microsoft shareholders actually voted yes on that one. So
is it too early in this market cycle to say, have fun staying poor?
I mean, they don't have to buy Bitcoin. They're like, Microsoft shareholders are doing okay this cycle, all right?
Have
like,
fun staying poor, Microsoft shareholders.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, they don't have to buy Bitcoin. It's just like, in fact, I think it's kind of silly sometimes for like, you know, big balance sheet corporations to kind of like, they should be investing in their business.
What are they doing with it instead?
Dividends.
Right now,
give me dividends. I'm a dividend maxi. Give back to shareholders. If you don't have anything to do with it, like don't try to run a fund or something like that. Or keep it in cash.
Don't do a Michael Saylor.
Yeah, I don't know if that's old school or what that is, but tell me about ETH price, David.
ETH price, 3,925 is where we started, up 1% to 3,942. ETH price during the big wick went from like 3,900 down to 3,500. Has since bounced back. But it recovered slightly more than Bitcoin did. Still below that $4,000 mark. So we did get across $4,000 last week, which is pretty cool.
What's
also
when
we recorded.
$4,800?
It's like something like $4,813 or $50. But like, I'm going to, it's real all-time high will happen like around 4,900. That's like true all-time high. That counts. But it's really $5,000 is the number to beat.
I think we could be all-time high ETH in December.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah,
for sure. That's totally within reason.
All-time high, December.
All-time highs. Yeah, ETH could paint a $1,000 like weekly candle for sure.
It's all discovery. Like when we're getting this 4K range and above, you could just see it just wants to punch through. It wants to punch through.
So Ryan, right after this weekly roll-up, I hop on a flight back to the Patagonia to go walk around some mountains. I'm out. No cell service, no Wi-Fi.
Oh.
For like 8 days, nine days.
So you can't check price?
Which is an entire weekly candle of price action.
You don't have like Starlink or something? You can just like dial in and check crypto prices?
Not backpacking Starlink. No. So we'll see. We'll see what happens when I get back. But I'm going to be like, yeah, it's just going to be one price when I leave and a completely different price when I get back.
Yeah, so...
You're going to do the weekly roll with Sazzle next week, so I will be out.
Yeah. So are you saying, like, I guess there's a history of David goes out and good things happen for crypto,
things
right?
have happened, correct. Right. Things
all
have happened.
Right.
But, like,
next week.
It's all been regulatory stuff. And, like, there's no, like, more regulatory person to ask. Like, we've already asked them all.
Yeah. But it's about time for the market to, you know, figure out how bullish this space is. It's just, like, it's building.
Yeah.
It's still building.
Yeah.
One thing you can see that's building are these ETH inflows, man.
Oh, my God.
It has been crazy. Look, total net inflows now. Last week, I remember it was just above $1 billion. Now it's almost $2 billion in total Ethereum ETF inflows.
Okay. No, I think, if I remember correctly, last week we were saying it was the fourth, I think, and we were saying we are going to break above $1 billion.
Okay,
we
were just
week.
Under $1 billion.
The next day, it painted 0.43 billion in one single day, $430 million in inflows the next day. And now we are about to cross $2 billion. So we've added basically $1 billion of inflows in 7 days.
That's crazy. And yes, you can see this on the charts here. See this green line here? This is
green
when
line,
we started to get into positive inflow territory.
And it looks like building. The inverse burn.
It looks like the inverse burn. Do you know, it's actually a fun fact. How much do you think ETH is inside, percent of total supply is inside of ETFs right now?
1 to 2%.
It's higher, David. We are 3%, I want to say.
3%? 3%?
Looking
at
this.
Okay.
Oh, no, 2.78%.
Okay. All right.
And
ETFs. Pretty good. That's pretty good. And like a lot of it has happened in the last month.
Almost one MicroStrategy's worth of
MicroStrategy
in there. That's looking good. How about the ratio?
Ratio, I will say it has neither shown strength nor weakness. It has shown flatness since we started the month.
Yeah.
But historically, December has been a very good month, so we'll see what the rest of this month has in store. Total crypto market cap, we are almost at $4 trillion,
wow.
$3.85 trillion, which is just nuts. We'll be at $4 trillion. We'll probably
before
be at $4
trillion
this year, before you know it. Yeah, next week it's within reason. Also, Layer 2 update brought to you by Mantle, a Layer 2 that we know and love. Jesse from Base says, countdown to 1 million ETH bridge to Base. We are at 994,000 Ether in the Base bridge contracts. And Mateus from Grow the Pie put out this tweet that I liked. Today, 3 years ago, the median transaction costs on Layer 2s like Arbitrum, OP Mainnet were between $2 and $5. Now they are between $0.001, so one-tenth of a penny. And 5 pennies, 99% cheaper. Long way. We've come a long way since 2021. Still a lot of juice left to squeeze.
I think that's a pretty good story for Ether. It's getting locked up in layer twos, right? So you got like about 3%, maybe 4% of ETH supply in layer twos. You got another 3 or 4% inside of ETFs, Ethereum ETFs. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good story, I think, for the cycle. Well, you have fees dropping on layer twos. So, you know, some tailwinds there, certainly.
And then movers of the last 2 weeks. We usually do movers of the week. We're doing movers of the last 2 day period. We have some pretty impressive numbers. Aave is up an incredible amount. I couldn't believe it when I saw $366 Aave. That's up something like 60% in 2 weeks.
Is that all time highs?
The DeFi, that no, all time highs like something like $600.
Really? Okay.
But it got there in the peak of DeFi summer.
Okay.
So yeah, Aave up 40% on the week, up 83% in 2 weeks. Aave is up 83% in 2 weeks.
Well,
so,
I mean, it's just hitting numbers.
That is a DeFi index.
I mean, it's hitting record numbers in terms of like loan value. Also, you know, the World Liberty Finance, you know, Trump and team,
yeah,
buying Aave. They're buying a ton of ETH. They're buying a little bit of Bitcoin. They're buying Aave and they're buying Link right now.
They're buying the Aave token?
Yeah, wow. Dude. Well, they're building on Aave. So right. Why wouldn't they?
DYDX is up 28% in 1 week and up 50% in 2 weeks. That's probably triggered by the Hyperliquid airdrop in Meta. The Hyperliquid new token, brand new token, is up to $18 billion when it launched at something like $4 or $5 billion last week. That's pretty crazy.
That's been an incredible breakout story. Yeah.
Aerodrome on Base up 22% in 7 days, up 66% in 14 days. Athena is up to a dollar, coming up to 56% increase in 2 week period. And then Uniswap at $18, up 42% over 2 weeks. DeFi tokens catching bids. Again, consistently getting bids.
I got to be honest, this collection of tokens here makes a lot more sense to me than what we were talking about the previous 2 weeks of like XRP being up, you know, like 80, 90%. Like this is just, there's some fundamentals back here. Like all of these protocols are doing something, right? And doing something big. So this is like DeFi renaissance territory.
All of these have cash flows to them. Yeah. Every single one.
Yeah, it's amazing. So suffice it to say, things are going pretty well right now in crypto land. It is a full-on bull market, and everyone's very excited. Now, we might be in a crypto bubble of sorts, right? Like, this is all we live and breathe this stuff. It's all we talk about. We're like permabulls have been since we entered this space. There is another section of the world that is not in this crypto bubble at all. I ran across this clip. This is a news anchor on MSNBC in the context of Trump kind of pivoting super pro crypto, talking about a Bitcoin reserve. This is the type of conversation that's going on MSNBC. I'm just going to play the news anchor here.
And in the new Congress, a Senate Republican, I want you to please pay attention to this. I know you want to tune out, but please don't. They plan to propose a bill that would sell off some of the Federal Reserve's gold to buy Bitcoin. Watch this.
I just want to pause it here because that's not even correct. That's not what Lummis is proposing, Senator Lummis is proposing. Remember, we had her on the podcast. Mm-hmm. She's not talking about selling any gold, okay? Mm-hmm. She's talking about adjusting gold, the fair market value of gold in the balance sheet, essentially to its fair market value instead of its book value. So we're not talking about selling any gold. Anyway, that's flat out incorrect, but let's continue playing.
Have we got a president for president? Donald Trump. Here it is. This is the Bitcoin Reserve Bill. Over 5 years, the United States will assemble 1 million Bitcoin, 5% of the world supply. And it will be held for a minimum of 20 years and can be used for one purpose. Reduce our debt. Well, Cynthia Lummis, you can take that bill and sit down with me any night of the week, and I would love to go through every word, every paragraph, every page. But I'd first like to know how much the crypto industry has given you, because for fact's sake, you cannot pay debt down with Bitcoin. If Bitcoin crosses the $100,000 mark, like it did last week, that means it would cost the government at least $100 billion. And former SEC official John Reed was on 60 Minutes last night to sound the alarm about just how dangerous this industry is.
Listen to this, David.
Crypto is a scourge. It's not something that you want in your society. It has no utility. It's just pure speculation. Remember, there's no balance sheet to crypto. There's no financial statements. Every single crime you can conceive of is easier to do now because of crypto, especially ransomware. human sex trafficking, sanctions evasion, money laundering.
All the bad things.
North Korea is financing their nuclear weapons program.
Think of anything bad.
Let's associate Bitcoin with everything bad. Wow. You know while I was listening to that whole thing?
What's that?
This is such a great marketing tool for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, it's so bullish. It is so bullish.
It's just everywhere. Once you cross 100K, even those that are kind of like triggered by the Bitcoin reserve and 100K price point, they start talking about it too.
Right.
So, and attention feeds into, you know, like crypto, like nothing else. That was, do you know actually who that was? John Reed?
No, tell me.
Yeah. So that was a 60 Minutes interview on Sunday that aired. Brad, the Ripple CEO, was on there. This guy was on there. John Reed is an SEC prosecutor. So he was like one of the ones who was going after crypto. So
you
could kind of see the fervor through which they pursued.
Right.
Actually, I want to play some more of this clip because then they had some guests on MSNBC. And let me just play this for you.
Crime you can think of is exponentially easier because of crypto. Here to discuss, Zeke Fox, investigative reporter for Bloomberg Businessweek and Bloomberg News. He's the author of Number Go Up, Inside Crypto's Wild Rise and Staggering Fall. Dan Nathan's still with us. I don't even
Which
want to
Riles
say this would be the
fall?
Biggest
Which one?
Bailout to crypto ever because they don't need a bailout. They're not in trouble. This would be the biggest bonus boon right there before our eyes, transferring billions of dollars to an industry we know almost nothing about.
There's this bump in our bags, bro.
I mean, it's wild. People are mad right now about the health insurance industry's profits. It's $100 billion. That's a couple of years of the entire industry's profits that would be spent buying Bitcoins from people who already have them. And it is a kind of a bailout. I mean, Bitcoin's been around for
Bitcoin
15
for
years. It hasn't delivered on any of its promises. It's as old as Uber. It's old as WhatsApp, but nobody's really using it
for anything. No one's using it for anything.
Now, they've given Trump a lot of money. They've got him talking about coming in and having the government spend huge money to pump the price up even further. Yeah, it's really wild.
Well, it has delivered.
This is just another side of the world I never see. I don't watch cable news at all.
Oh, my God.
Do they this not is the realize discussion that's happening.
They just gave the best marketing bit to Bitcoin. Like, I'm sorry. Like, okay, probably the woke lefties are watching this, and they're like, okay, I'm fearful of Bitcoin now. But then, like, if the average person watched that, they were like, oh, the government's going to pump Bitcoin. I'm going to go and buy Bitcoin. Thank you. Like, I'm listening to that, and they are just telling the world, like, not with the right tone, but like, yo, the government's gonna buy Bitcoin, and isn't that terrible? And I'm like, the government's gonna buy Bitcoin, I'm gonna buy Bitcoin.
Well, it's just interesting because I think it's because Trump is supporting it that they have to be on the other side of that,
of course,
right?
Naturally.
Because this is, MSNBC, and so they have to do that. But this is a narrative that's also going on. It just sounds like, I know what COPE sounds like, okay?
I'm an
ETH holder, okay?
That
I know what
probably
COPE
sounds like what it was like to listen to Bankless when Solana was pumping so goddamn high.
All right. Well, you know what? The interesting thing about all this discussion is, anybody who's listening to that and has stocks will likely be a net purchaser of Bitcoin in the future because MicroStrategy this month is very likely to enter the NASDAQ indice. A lot of the people who own mutual funds, of course, they're invested in the NASDAQ. They're invested in the S&P 500. If MicroStrategy enters the NASDAQ, then they'll essentially own Bitcoin.
Yeah.
MicroStrategy is a holding company for Bitcoin, so they'll own Bitcoin without even knowing it. I find that ironic. Also, BlackRock this week, people have been asking BlackRock all the time, hey, what percent of crypto should I hold? Like, what's the reasonable range as a percentage of my portfolio? They finally came out and gave us a number, and that number is not 1%, it's 2%, which is a lot.
A doubling. That's a doubling.
A lot coming from BlackRock, right? So, 4 years ago, BlackRock was saying like 0%, and then it was get off zero, and now it's 2%.
All right, that's a wrap on the market section. Coming up next, Trump has appointed the crypto czar. We're going to introduce you to David Sacks if you don't listen to the All In podcast. Also, a new name for the CFTC chair that would be pretty bullish for crypto. If you are a longtime Bankless listener, you have heard of this man before. And a reconfirmation vote for SEC Commissioner Caroline Crenshaw is up in the air. Will she be reconfirmed? Will she be confirmed? We do not like her. She was Gary Gensler's right-hand lady. So we're going to bring up this conversation and more. But first, a message to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred crypto exchange for buying crypto in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the link in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. Want to know the exchange we at Bankless use to buy, sell, and trade crypto? It's Kraken, one of the longest standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world, with tools for every type of trader to get started. Over 13 million users trust Kraken with their funds because they lead with transparency and privacy through top-notch security measures. Plus, you'll have access to professional 24/7, 365 client support from real humans because your financial goals deserve real attention. Kraken also has a trading platform for advanced traders called Kraken Pro. Professionals and DGens love Kraken Pro because it's one of the most customizable, high-performance, and intuitive trading platforms in the industry. Design your ultimate trading interface by choosing from over 25 widgets for market data, analysis, execution, and other order management tools. Save multiple layouts and switch between them effortlessly on any trading scenario across 300 different assets. Manage your trades on the go with Kraken Pro's highly rated mobile app, or use the all-new desktop app to unlock ladder trading in a native Rust application. With Kraken Pro, you can truly trade like a pro. Ready to take control over your crypto journey? Visit kraken.com/bankless to get started today. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss and is offered to U.S. customers through Payward Interactive, Inc. View legal disclosures at kraken.com/legal/disclosures. Are you ready to take control over your entire financial life? Crypto, DeFi, and fiat all in one place? Meet iYield, the free financial planning tool built for crypto natives. Unlike traditional portfolio trackers that just show you the value of your assets, iYield goes deeper. It consolidates everything: assets, debts, income, and expenses, offering you a complete financial picture across 16,000 tokens, 40 DeFi protocols, and all fiat currencies. With real-time DeFi yield tracking for platforms like Aave, Athena, Eigenlayer, and Uniswap, iYield ensures that you're always on top of your staking rewards, investments, and cash flow. And the best part? It's 100% free with no ads, and it's secure. No personal data, no ID requirements, no compromises. So head over to iYield.com to sign up today and get the guesswork out of financial planning. Uniswap Labs is making history with the largest bug bounty ever. $15.5 million for critical bugs found in Uniswap V4. This isn't just any update. Uniswap V4 is built with hundreds of contributions from community developers and has already undergone 9 independent audits, making it one of the most rigorously reviewed code bases to be deployed on-chain. And with 2.4 trillion in cumulative volume processed across Uniswap V2 and V3, without a single hack, the commitment to security and transparency is rock solid. Now Uniswap Labs is taking an extra step to make V4 as secure as possible with a $15.5 million bug bounty. Head to the link in the show notes to dive in and participate in the Uniswap V4 bug bounty. All the details, from eligibility and scope to the rewards, are there.
Okay, let's set the scene here. We've got Trump, of course, new administration. We've mentioned some of the cabinet positions in previous weeks. And just the overall context here, David, is this is a 180 on crypto that we're seeing. It's like whiplash. I think you called this in our conversation with the Bitwise guys earlier this week. It's like a whiplash, but in a good way, because the previous administration was so hostile.
10 out of 10 hostile.
10 out of 10. In ways we didn't know what was actually going on, they were hostile. And the opposite is happening. The new administration in the executive branch.
10 out of 10 favorable.
Yeah, it's like a pro-crypto army on the other side. Some people will look at this like the MSNBC host previously and say that this is bad. This is an example of corruption or something like this. We are unapologetically pro-crypto. So like for us, crypto is a freedom technology. This is clearly good. We needed to pivot in the other direction in the United States. Now, I do think it's important that we continue to preserve the decentralization values of crypto and not become kind of a banking cartel. But this is definitely the step that we need. So all of that is context. We're going to talk about a few more of the executive types of positions. But the first is this, the crypto czar, David. Can you give us some context? What happened this week with that position?
Yeah, so it was the position itself was announced. TBD on what a czar position is. I think it's more symbolic in this present moment, but it's probably something along the lines of like Trump's chief advisor. We'll talk about that here in a sec. Crypto and AI, call it like tech czar, frontier tech czar.
They combined it, right?
They combined it. Yeah. And you also heard Trump talk about crypto and AI in the same breath when we opened up this podcast. It's accelerationist. So call David Sacks the czar of accelerationist technologies in the United States. It's going to be something adjacent to deregulation. We know that if you listen to the All In podcast, basically all of them them are fans of deregulation. If you don't know David Sacks, he is a member of the PayPal mafia. He also founded Yammer, sold it to Microsoft in 2012. He's a general entrepreneur, venture capitalist, co-host of the All In podcast, which is definitely one of the most dominant podcasts that are out there. Big fan of Elon Musk, big fan of Peter Thiel, definitely in the inner circle of right-wing tech Silicon Valley types. He also commented on Operation Choke Point, so he is aware of Operation Choke Point. He's got exposure to crypto, so his VC fund Kraft invested into BitGo and Bitwise, and then also I think he has personal investment into Multicoin Capital, so he has a lot of Solana exposure, or maybe it's through Kraft, one of those two things. He also launched an AI-powered work chat app called Glue. He says to support a freer ecosystem empowering AI companies to grow, strongly against AI models displaying any sort of censorship, so open source AI, open AI, and advocated for the integration of AI technology into warfare and national security tools. So depends on how you feel about that. And so, big question, what is ASAR and what does ASAR do anyways? Do you have any clarity on this for me, Ryan? Because I do not know.
Yeah, a czar. I mean, that's a good question. It's certainly not a role that's like, you know, in the Constitution or in any legislation anywhere, right? So, as you said, it's unclear how much power this position actually holds. There was a article this week from Bloomberg, and according to Bloomberg, the designation is a special government employee. Okay, so this is like a part-time role. It doesn't require him to divest of his assets. It's not like a public servant in that way, or he doesn't even have to publicly disclose his assets. So that's interesting from a conflict of interest perspective. And there's also, it's a part-time job, okay? So there's a maximum number of working days per year that a special government employee is supposed to spend, and that's 130 working days a year. So David Sacks is going to be still full-time on like Kraft.
So it is an actual employed position. There's like a contract and a signature that has to go down, and it's a real position, not just a title.
It is. It depends, I guess, how Trump sort of uses it, right? Yeah. And what that role is. But I would have to think it's going to play a coordinator type role inside of the Trump administration, right? An interface with AI, an interface with crypto. It's interesting that Trump seems to favor these kind of media personalities as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, like David Sacks has the megaphone on the All In podcast. Right. So if there's any shenanigans, any anti-crypto shenanigans going on in government, he not only says it in a kind of official crypto czar type way and tries to sort of defang it, but he'll also have the All In platform, you know, the podcast platform to be a megaphone for that too. So, I mean,
the first podcast coming from inside the White House.
This was, I'm not surprised by this choice.
No.
I would say it feels very, very Trump. And, you know, David Sacks has been a huge Trump supporter the entire time.
Oh, he has been beating the drums about Trump from a very early part of the All In podcast.
It's a reward for loyalty as well.
Yes, very
much
so. It is, it is compensation in a way. In a different corner of the White House, CFTC chair rumors. So former CFTC commissioner Brian Quintenz, who left the CFTC to join A16Z Crypto to work on policy over there, is now emerging as a top pick for the CFTC.
He has been reportedly this time.
The chair. He went from commissioner to private sector to chair. So
maybe. That's the rumor.
Potentially going to chair. So a little bit of a revolving door there. Reportedly has been advising the Trump transition team on crypto policy. Current boss Mark Andreessen and David Sacks run in the same like conservative venture capitalist Silicon Valley circles. Emily Choi from Coinbase says, super bullish on the future of digital assets in the U.S. if Brian Quintenz heads up the CFTC. I'll say if Brian Quintenz sits on the chair of the CFTC, that's like if Hester Peirce sat on the chair of the SEC.
100%.
That's how you should think about this.
Brian Quintenz is just like fantastic. He understands crypto from the ground up. We've had an opportunity to meet him. We've had an opportunity to talk to him on the podcast.
He was at Permissionless. He's were on a panel with him at Permissionless.
Yeah. I was just on a panel with him. I mean, like, you talk about the whiplash we were talking about, the pro-crypto army being instantiated. Imagine you have all of these places. And by the way, in the new administration, it could come to pass that the CFTC actually has more authority over crypto than the SEC under Gensler was trying to get, right? So this could be a very important way,
SEC and CFTC with Paul Atkins covered it last year. Fantastically
pro-crypto.
If Brian Quintenz, if Brian Quintenz gets this one, I don't know. Pick one. I don't care.
How can it get any more crypto?
We're winning either way.
Crypto. I know. Okay. And so actually, maybe the cherry on top for this week is there's actually a vote going on. So do you remember Commissioner Caroline Crenshaw, David? Does that name ring a bell?
The only time I put a face to a name and a voice to a name was when she was testifying along the other side of the other SEC chairs. And she was basically just like Gary Gensler mini.
Yeah. It was a mini me, Gary Gensler, basically. Yeah. And she's been against the Bitcoin ETF. She was on the side of, like, even when Gary voted yes for the Bitcoin ETF, she was a no. Right. Okay. She's been very anti-crypto. In addition to her, there was another anti-crypto commissioner, Jamie Lizaranga. And Jamie has decided to resign, actually, due to some family health issues. So that person's gone. Caroline Crenshaw was going to be renominated for her position. So she goes in front of Congress to be voted in again, renominated. And she's kind of like the last standing anti-crypto SEC commissioner. My God, the Gensler army has really fallen apart, hasn't it? Anyway, this was scheduled. A vote for her renomination was scheduled for December 11th. So that would have been Wednesday of this week. And it's been postponed. It's actually been deferred. The vote itself has been deferred. There has been an outcry from the crypto community to deny her vote. And a lot of the, you know, like a lot of Republicans are sympathetic to this. A lot of the politicians who want to get some check marks in the pro-crypto column would also presumably vote no to this. This is Brian Armstrong. Caroline Crenshaw, he says, was a failure as an SEC commissioner and should be voted out. She tried to block the Bitcoin ETFs and was worse than Gensler on some issues, which I didn't think was possible. The Senate Banking Committee should take note. The crypto community is watching the vote. I'm told it will be factored into the Stand With Crypto scorecards for politicians. Wow, that is Brian Armstrong wielding the political stick on the back of some major crypto wins this election cycle and sort of like saying, hey, politicians, you vote for Caroline Crenshaw, there will be consequences. Mm-hmm. We will remember.
You really got to hand it to, I think, is one of the least appreciated galvanizers of the pro-crypto army, which is Elizabeth Warren, the leader of the anti-crypto army.
Sure,
I think without that one meme of that blue picture of Elizabeth Warren is here to fight, to recruit an anti-crypto army, did the most... some of the biggest ROI for crypto that I have ever seen. In a
maybe she
single...
was a pro-crypto plant the whole time.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren, number one pro-crypto advocate. Well done for your work, Elizabeth Warren. All right, coming up next, is there growing consensus around increasing the Ethereum L1 capacity? More and more proponents are starting to voice their opinions. Not everyone is convinced, but some pretty key stakeholders have voiced their opinions on Twitter. We're going to go through some of them. Also, a bunch of tokens launched this week. Move, Magic Eden, Pudgy Penguins. And then this is, Ryan's going to take this one. Quantum computer breakthrough this week could spell trouble for crypto down the road. Is Bitcoin going to zero?
Yes,
those are
it's
Ryan
going to
words.
Zero.
Those are Ryan's words, not mine. He's going to explain them to you. But
no,
first,
a question.
Before he does that, we're going to get to all these sponsors that make this show possible. Imagine if the world's GDP moved on-chain. Well, say hello to SafeNet, built by Safe, the project set on actually making that happen. It's not a blockchain, it's not a layer two, it's a transaction processor network built to send money anywhere and swap anything on thousands of layer twos, all from a single universal balance. With sub 500 second execution guarantees and zero cross-chain latency, SafeNet delivers a Solana-like user experience for Ethereum and its layer twos, making transactions lightning fast and seamless. SafeNet connects Safe smart accounts across multiple chains, allowing users to access any chain with a unified balance, all with supercharged security, scalability, and speed. So get involved today. Join the waitlist and follow Safe on X and check out the SafeNet docs. There is a link in the show notes. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive expensive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. Dankrad Feist, one of the core contributors to Ethereum, says on Twitter, "I think it's time we increased the gas limit." That means increasing the layer one scale. He says, "If you run a validator, you can contribute to this. Every block acts as a vote on whether to increase it. If more than 50% of the stake agrees to an increase, the gas limit will increase. I just set my validators to vote for up to 60 million gas." So a little bit of context. This is actually how Ethereum has worked since the dawn of time. Previously miners, now today validators, would just signal what they think the gas size of a block ought to be. The current size of a block is 30 million, but miners, now validators, can actually vote this up individually. So this is kind of a validator-run consensus of Ethereum is how big should the blocks be. There has just been long, sticky consensus at 30 million. Dankrad is saying that he has just set his validators for a doubling of up to 60 million, but not yet. He had to follow that up saying, "Quick write-up to explain what's happening about the gas limit raise." That first tweet that I just read was December 1st. The tweet that I'm reading right now is from today, December 12th. "There has never been an increase in the gas since the merge. However, before the merge, it was an established practice that miners would not use this power arbitrarily, but typically only after core devs signaled it would be okay to change. Recently, some of us have started signaling that we think it is time for an increase in the gas. Unfortunately, that has hit a bit of a speed bump as core devs discovered that raising it over 40 million was not actually safe to a constant that needs to be changed in the clients first. I'm calling this kind of like a one-off anomaly construction of a client. Just needed to get that fixed first. However, Dankrad continues, "I think there is a lot of messaging agreeing that 36 million is a good first step. So not over 40 million, but up to 36 million, again, from 30 million. And clients are releasing updates to make this the default so validators don't have to manually use command line flags to vote for this. I think it is likely that some big pools will join us in the next few weeks and we will see this increase." Justin Drake also tweeting out on December 8th, "Configuring my validator for a 36 million gas limit. Staking operators control the limit. Ethereum has held a 30 million limit for 3.5 years. A 20% bump to 36 million safely greases wheels. You can see gas limits at pumpthegas.org." And then he goes on to ask when GigaGas and talks about snarked execution clients are the key to scaling gas 10x, 100x, 1000x, and then a few more details on that. So there's growing consensus that we can very quickly, today basically, get 20% more capacity on the Ethereum layer one, which I think is really just a gateway drug to get it to 60, which is where Dankrad wanted it in the first place. And then we'll probably let the network stabilize a little bit. Some people will fall off the network. They will learn how to get back onto the network. They will get faster internet. They will just tinker with things. Optimizations will be had. And then 60 will become the new norm. And then we can do this again and again and again safely. So I am very appreciative of these conversations. I'm happy that Justin and Dankrad are putting these messages out there. What do you think about all this, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the context is, right, when you increase the block size from 30 to 60, you're just increasing the amount of transactions and throughput that yeah. Ethereum can sort of sustain. And it's like the question is like, why not 100 then? Why 60, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason is because like the more you increase, the increase in kind of the capacity it requires for staking, in particular on the bandwidth side of things, right? Which is the real constraint.
Bandwidth and stake growth, yeah.
Yeah, bandwidth and stake growth, and particular like bandwidth, right? So for other networks, it requires like data center level connections, like 1 to 10 gigabits per second, right? And Ethereum is supposed to be consumer grade hardware, consumer grade internet, and then you can kind of like stake using it, right? So that's really the trade-off space. But the big point is we haven't adjusted anything in 3.5 years. Yeah. Bandwidth has gotten better. Hardware has improved according to Moore's law. Mm-hmm. And on a more routine basis, maybe we could just increase the gas fee gradually and preserve the staking requirements for validators. So that's kind of the conversation, what's going on.
Definitely something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. I think there's like path dependency here, where if we just jumped from 30 million to 60 million, that would be pretty aggressive and that would cause a lot of people to fall off the network. But if you like ease your way into 60 million, you can get there sustainably, reliably, securely, and you can end up in the same spot, but with a more resilient network along the way. So I'm a fan of this incremental improvements towards a higher
I'm sort of a fan of some way to just like not program it, but have it regularly scheduled. So we don't have to always have this like kind of community debate every year or something like that, right? And that's sort of what Dankrad proposed, but it's going to take some time to get there.
All right, getting into some token drops. The Movement Foundation has launched the Movement Mainnet and Move token. This is a layer two on Ethereum using the Move programming language. So this is a Move coming into the scene. Again, Move is this very well-respected, sought-after programming language coming out of the Facebook Dia Librem project, which has spawned many of these people who are building the Move languages chains, like Aptos. Sui. Aptos, Sui, and now Move being the layer two on Ethereum. So Move is the gas fee token. So ETH is not the gas fee token. It's also the staking token and governance token. Dropped to a $1.6 billion market cap with a $7 billion totally diluted valuation. $10 billion total supply of the tokens. $2 billion of them are circulating. 10% of the total tokens was the initial Move drop, with 40% going into staking rewards, ecosystem initiatives, liquidity providing, and then also some early contributors and backers, and then the foundation. There is a claims.movementnetwork.xyz to go see if you can claim your token, if you're eligible. Otherwise, just use the Bankless Claimables app. That's why we build it for you. Snapshot was taken on November 23rd, 2024. So there is a link in the show notes to find out all that information. Also, Magic Eden dropped ME. A little different of a token drop. I've never seen this before. 1 billion supply came in at a $4.7 billion valuation, but the claim will be available across Bitcoin, Solana, and multiple EVM chains, the Ethereum mainnet, Base, Optimism, Arbitrum. Allocation fully unlocked at TGE. ME is an SPL token, but the token is available across 8 different chains, including Bitcoin. I don't know how they do that. Solana and some EVM chains. You have until February 1st, 2025 to claim.
Those were two of the big token notices on the week, but there was also this one, David, the Pudgy Penguins token, and it caused a little bit of a stir. So Pengu, the official coin of Pudgy Penguins, launching in 2024, hasn't launched yet, right? But that's happening in December, I guess. We're running out of time in 2024. What is the story of Pengu from the Pudgy Penguins NFT project?
Pengu is the ERC-20 token that goes along with the Pudgy Penguins NFT. So if you have a Pudgy Penguin NFT, that is your claim on the token, along with Little Pudgies and Pudgy Rods. So makes sense. Tokens go to the NFT holders. But interestingly, like the Magic Eden token, but still slightly different. This token is being launched on Solana, which is interesting because the penguins are NFTs on Ethereum, but the token is being launched on Solana. In the tweet thread that goes out, it says that they are looking to reach out to alternative broader communities because they already have the Ethereum community with their NFT. Why not just capture the Solana community with the token? So therefore launch it on Solana for distribution. I tweeted out this tweet that caused a bunch of consternation in the Ethereum space, saying massive L for Ethereum, scale the layer one. My reasoning here was that, well, Solana has this community that is not the Ethereum community because Solana scaled the layer one. And so Pudgy Penguins went to go to that community, launch their token because that community exists because Solana scaled the layer one. So this is my call to action for the Ethereum community, why I'm interested in the whole pump the gas thing, because there wouldn't be as much distribution elsewhere if Ethereum had scaled its layer one. Now, I went and I asked to verify this take with Luca Netz. I just went to DMs with him on Twitter and asked him, like, hey, like, can you just give me the spark notes about why you guys launched the token on Solana? And he goes, I think it starts and stops with gas fees. They're going to launch on Abstract, which is the chain that they're going to build on, but they just don't want to rush it.
Is that a ZK chain?
That's a ZK Sync chain. Yeah, Hyperchain. Yeah. And they didn't want to launch on another layer two because they're building Abstract. ETH mainnet, not feasible for the millions of people that he wants to come into crypto. And so because Solana has the cheap fees and the alternative community that's not Ethereum, they decided to launch on Solana. So that was kind of the analysis behind there. That tweet, the Ethereum community really did not like that tweet from me. They thought it kind of like lacked nuance, which, yeah, it kind of does. So I'll admit that. But directionally, I stand by it.
You said this tweet was lazy and lacked nuance, though, David. That's what you said.
Below. It's not, but I didn't say it was wrong. I said it was lazy.
There are many ways of
nuance.
Scaling the L1, and the majority of them I do not agree with for the much needed elaboration. Dankrad, going back to Dankrad. Mm-hmm. So I think like the reason some people took issue with your tweet was basically, you know, scaling the L1 is not enough capacity for all of the world.
It'll never be enough.
You know,
right.
It'll never be enough, right? So it's not necessarily going to solve this, right? It's almost like some people saw this as an orthogonal thing, which is basically like, yeah,
definitely not orthogonal.
We should scale the L1, but like realize that scaling the L1 and becoming Solana, let's say, in a monolithic chain was never
Ethereum's path.
Possible. And I don't think that's what you're saying here.
It's
but
also
that's
not
why
what
it
I'm
didn't
saying.
Capture the nuance. Right. One other general question I have for you, though, is, Why do Pudgy Penguins need a coin? I'm just wondering.
Don't ask questions.
Okay.
Don't ask questions.
I just like, okay.
Sir,
just
it's
wondering.
Token season.
Look, man, Luca is an incredible shipper. He's really turned that project around. Killing it. Pudgy Penguins, I think, are NFT floor all-time highs now.
Wow.
And this is, look at this turnaround,
26
David.
ETH. Yeah, if you bought Pudgy Penguins below 2 Ether in the bear market, you're up a 10x in Ether terms.
It's because of his leadership. I mean, they actually executed and delivered. So,
God, I think Pudgy's might turn into the biggest bag fumble I'll ever have.
Oh, really? You had some Pudgies, right?
I had three or four Pudgies, including two very clean Pudgies. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And when did you lose confidence?
Shout out. Oh, it wasn't about Pudgy specifically. It was just getting burned on NFTs. Like all my R blocks were down to zero. Like everything that I owned other than my CryptoPunk was basically at zero. And I was like, all right, well, this was dumb. I just bought JPEGs. I just got bear market burned.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I wanted to like clean out the wallet because I always rotate my wallets. And so it was just easier just to liquidate them to ETH.
I mean, this was a turnaround, though. It's a founder-led turnaround. That's what really happened. So who could have predicted that,
dude?
Right?
It was the next day, bro, that Luca acquired Pudgy Penguins. I sold my Pudgies. The next day, Luca acquires Pudgy Penguins, and it pops like 3x off the floor.
We all have regrets, David. Let's not live in the past. All right, the future is bullish.
Give me a regret of yours to make me feel better.
Did you my regret is, let me see my regrets.
Not
all of my NFTs are regrets that I have. I could show you some ugliness in my portfolio, okay? And it's still there. I didn't even sell anything and they're still down bad. I never owned an Ether Rock though. Did you own an Ether Rock?
Bro. Okay, so Ether Rocks
you
are these
did
crazy,
own Ether Rocks.
Crazy,
I knew you were playing with
crazy,
all this stuff.
These crazy NFTs that are literally just rocks, basically making a farce of how NFTs are just JPEGs. So if somebody made JPEGs of rocks with like different shades, they're just different shades. One's kind of gray, one's kind of blue, one's kind of green, but they're basically just rocks. And I remember, and these went for, I think the top one went for like something like $50 or $60 million
That's
in 2021.
Stupid.
It was
That's
so dumb.
How
was so
are we
dumb.
So dumb?
It was so dumb. And I saw Ether Rocks. I looked at Ether Rocks, the OpenSea. I shared it in my alpha group in 2021, like my friends, my college friends. And the Ether Rocks were going for like half an ETH to like 1.5 ETHs. And I shared it in the group and I was like, this is absolutely redacted, but that's probably bullish. No one did anything,
including
no
you?
One bought. I did not buy. No one bought.
And then shot up
and,
to like
and
50
a
million.
Week later, one sold for like $100 million.
Wow!
Like, what the hell?
Wow! Well, so you missed it that time. You also missed it this time, David, because I regret to inform you, Ether Rock number 19 was purchased this week. It's not 2021 for 235 ETH. That is almost $1 million.
$1 million.
Okay, so our NFTs back. We got Pudgies, CryptoPunks doing well. We got Ether Rock selling. Is this a little comeback story, you think?
I don't think so. Not yet. Okay. Not yet. Pudgies absolutely, but Pudgies is like the anomaly. Pudgies is like buying Link or Aave or Synthetics.
You gotta have fundamentals this time.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. But like CryptoPunks are up to a 40 ETH floor when they were once at 100. They're not dead. So what's happening right now is NFTs are not dead.
Yeah.
Pudgies, very much alive. NFTs generally, not dead.
Okay.
Well, a lot of it is just like ETH beta exposure.
You want me to give you the story of the quantum compute
Ryan's
going to
FUD our entire industry.
Bitcoin is not going to zero. Let me just say that up front.
He wrote it in the notes.
A lot of people were saying this type of thing in kind of like mainstream. But the question is, could quantum computing threaten crypto? We've always known this is on the horizon.
Why was quantum compute even in the news cycle this week?
All right, so this is a tweet from the CEO of Google. He says this: introducing Willow, our new state-of-the-art quantum computing chip with breakthrough that can reduce errors exponentially as we scale up using more qubits. This was actually hailed in the quantum computing circles as a major breakthrough because of this ability to reduce errors exponentially. And it's not that Willow and the quantum computing at Google is very powerful now. It's not. It's just, if they are able to reduce the errors exponentially, then they can actually scale this technology in a way they previously couldn't. So there are some estimates out there that, you know, we could start begin to break some of the strong encryption in, like, you know, the year 2030, 2035, something like this. This may bring those timelines actually closer. This is, you know, hailed by many as a breakthrough technology. So a lot of people are asking the question is, okay, if quantum computing is now right around the corner, could it break our cryptocurrencies? Could it break Bitcoin, right? Here's a tweet from Investor Ash. University of Sussex researchers estimate that breaking Bitcoin encryption in one day would need 13 million qubits. Willow right now has 105 qubits. All right. You need 13
different numbers.
Million. We got 105 right now. Not possible today, but theoretically, if you had 124,000 Willows, you could break encryption in one day. If you had 340 Willows, in 1 year. Right? So it's closer than it's been previously.
Yeah.
And this breakthrough might have brought it even closer. So
the real reason that people are scared is, like, the time to break a wallet is, like, if it's 1 year, well, then you can just move your Bitcoins on your wallet. And so they'll never catch up to you because you're moving
basically
your wallet. Not Satoshi, though.
That's
not
right,
Satoshi's
David.
Wallets.
That's right. So that's kind of the thing. So this is the founder of Avalanche who's commenting here, Emin. He says, there is an issue with Satoshi's 1 million Bitcoin. Remember this Bitcoin that his mind been locked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Estimates are he's got about a million of it. So apparently these Satoshi early mine coins use the very old pay to public key, P2PK format, which reveals the public key and gives the attacker time to grind for the mother of all cryptography bounties. P2PK isn't used by modern Bitcoin wallets or modern systems, but it was there in the early days of Bitcoin. So as quantum computing gets threatening, the Bitcoin community might want to look into freezing Satoshi's coins, or more generally, provide
isn't
a sunset date.
Isn't that a hard fork? That's a hard fork, bro.
Right. That's a hard fork.
You can't hard fork Bitcoin. You cannot hard fork Bitcoin.
But the problem is there's a 1 million Bitcoin bounty on Bitcoin, which is, like, I mean, I don't know, five times the amount that the U.S. government owns. It's
right.
Like, you know, like three times as much as Michael Saylor owns. Available to whoever gets quantum computing to the level to be able to crack this, unless Bitcoin does something, unless it hard forks. So the threat is not imminent, by the way. I mean, we're still talking right now 5 to 10 years away, unless something massive actually happens. But still, it's out there, David.
It's the closest it's ever been, that's for sure.
And I'm not saying it's existential, because we all know that Bitcoin has the ability to do things like, you know, socially, at least most people
right.
who kind of study crypto can do this. Like, you can hard fork, you can correct this.
Right.
But Satoshi's not moving his coins anytime soon. So that means there's a 1 million Bitcoin bounty out there. So what do you think this means? You think this means we'll have, like, hard fork wars? There'll be like a Bitcoin Quantum and, like, Bitcoin Classic in the future?
This has been a long conversation in the Ethereum space, as, like, there's are some inevitable brick walls that Bitcoin runs into, one being the security budget, the other being quantum computing. And Bitcoin is, like, fine until then, but then once those things arrive, then it's already too late. Like, you actually have to be proactive against those things. The idea here with quantum computing is Bitcoin has a death day. And so people talk about, oh yeah, Bitcoin's not going
to... When you say death day, it's not quite... It's like it has a reckoning, let's say, because
sure.
It has to decide... I mean, what Emin suggested was freezing Satoshi's coins. Can
yes.
you imagine that?
Which is what people would say is not Bitcoin. If you are freezing people's coins, then that's something else other than Bitcoin. 21
people,
million in property rights.
People
Bitcoin.
Were happy to tell him that. In
right.
like in his you know in the Twitter comments basically it's
yeah.
like
I saw the first response was you can't free Satoshi's coins, those are his coins, which I appreciate the sentiment. also might be untenable.
Well, or you could just allow this game to play out and allow the first quantum computers, probably a nation state, with, mm-hmm. you know, imagine the nation state reserve currency wars heat up, everyone's stacking Bitcoin. And so China and the U.S. are in a race.
A Bitcoin-inspired arms race for quantum computing.
Yeah, can you imagine
that? Donald Trump, you got to add quantum computing to the accelerationist
list. Get that 1 million in Bitcoin? Is that
how
it goes down?
Yeah, that's the reserve. That's how you fill the reserve. That's how you pay off the national debt. You got to fund quantum computing.
We should have a Synthesis Alumnus bill to just like fund the quantum computing to go collect the 1 million Bitcoin. Is that it?
I mean, I think that's weird. That's right.
Of course, it's not just Bitcoin. There are other crypto networks that require mm-hmm. quantum computing upgrade, notably Ethereum, which is like, it's sort of in the roadmap. It's, you know, like that might need to be accelerated, but Ethereum doesn't have a problem like doing these types of quantum hard forks.
Anything that
right?
can hard fork does not have this issue.
Very interesting. We'll see how this ends up. Again, not an imminent threat. No, Bitcoin's mm-hmm. not going to zero, but it is in the water out there somewhere.
All right, three big stablecoin news this week. First, Circle and Binance entered a strategic partnership. This is something that I don't think I could ever have seen had CZ ever not bent the knee, but he did bend the knee.
Yep.
And so Binance bent the knee. Now Circle and Binance have a strategic partnership over USDC to announce that USDC will be extended inside the Binance platform.
That's
wow.
huge for
Never
USDC.
Thought I would see
Big
the day.
Win. That's yep. exactly what it is, David. It's bending the knee. It's saying it's like, hey, knee. We don't want to go to jail. Sure, we'll use yep. your stable coins, US government apparatus.
Your private CBDC, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's first news. USDE, the dollar stablecoin from Athena, has flipped DAI. Wow. So Athena's synthetic dollar USDE is now the third largest stablecoin behind USDT, Tether, and USDC after doubling its market cap, currently clocking in at $5.5 billion, which DAI sits at 5.2. It has grown quite a lot because demand for leverage is increasing. So does Athena's yield, which is currently at 27%. So this is definitely bull market growth, which, Ryan, makes me a little nervous.
A little bit.
A little nervous, keeping an eye on that. But nonetheless, it is pretty cool to have a new style of stablecoin that's out there doing well. So congratulations to the Athena team. I'm sure their eyes are on it even more than mine. Coinbase Third will restrict the EU citizens' access to DAI due to MiCA regulations. So because DAI is not a MiCA-compliant stablecoin, Coinbase will restrict EU citizens' access to DAI, interestingly. But nonetheless, DAI is being replaced in the Maker system by USDS, which are MiCA-compliant.
It seems like there's no way for DAI to be MiCA-compliant as well. And they just designed it in such a way that it's just like yep. impossible. So
Correct.
Europeans just don't
Correct.
Get access to it.
Correct.
But, right. By the way, this is related. Did you see this? It was floating around the last week or so. This is public from scratch U.S. companies, all the U.S. bubbles here, versus EU companies that have gotten to $10 billion in market cap in the last 50 years. Look at EU over here, Europe over here. Just a
US,
few tiny bubbles.
U.S. just has massive bubbles. You know, Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft, huge bubbles with companies with huge market caps. EU just getting absolutely mogged by the United States. Tiny little bubbles.
It's just regulation, man.
It's just regulation, man.
It's just like you can't do MiCA, you can't do DeFi, yep. you can't do all of these things. And we've
fun.
Got a taste of it in the U.S.
Can't
it
have fun,
like
can't
reverse.
Make money.
Speaking of not having fun, the U.K.
Fantastic transition.
Is no longer able to access pump.fun, okay? The U.K. said, enough of these meme coins. The U.K.'s Financial Conduct Authority, FCA, another three-letter mm-hmm. agency, issued a warning about pump.fun, stating that the platform is not authorized to operate in the country. Okay. Added that customers dealing with pump.fun won't have access to consumer protections. I feel like we kind of knew that, but as a result, pump.fun is no longer available in the UK. I think they geo-blocked everybody in the UK.
Meanwhile, some goddamn whiplash. Checks do not have to pay taxes on crypto they held
Czech
for
Republic.
3 years. What the hell? Tax-free 3-year crypto gains? Are you serious?
Yeah, that's happening. I mean,
that is nuts.
This is the Czech Republic. So if you hold your crypto for 3 years plus, encouraging holding behavior, mm-hmm. that's, you know, very, very bankless aligned of them. You know, good long-term mm-hmm. hold. You don't have to pay capital gains if you sell it after 3 years.
That is awesome.
There's a tale of two jurisdictions going on right now. Yeah. There's jurisdictions that are super crypto hostile and other jurisdictions that are turning to crypto friendly because they want the growth and the economics and the jobs and the industry to come to them. And those that are, you know, like open to crypto will do much better. Those that are closed will not. I mean, this is how it works. Wow.
Congratulations, all Czech listeners of the podcast. I'm very jealous.
You think that could come to the U.S.?
No.
No capital gains on crypto?
Definitely not. Yeah. That would be insane. That would be insane. I mean, I've seen some pretty crazy things doing crypto in these years, so I'm not going to count it out, but yeah, that would be kind of crazy.
You never know.
All right. This is going to be the end of the roll-up, guys. Thanks for sticking with us. We have fun doing these every single week. If you don't mind, please like and subscribe if you are watching this on YouTube. If you're doing Apple Podcasts, if you don't mind, again, opening up that podcast player and giving us a 5-star review.
Or we Spotify, too, right? We made
Spotify
number 10
too,
on
Spotify
the tech
too.
Charts.
That's right. Bankless is the number 10 technology podcast.
Let's get us
to
top
Spotify.
Five.
Let's get us to top five. That'd be great. And also, just shout out, if you haven't tuned into the AI roll-up that I'm doing weekly with eJazz, have you listened to it this week, Ryan? We're on our third.
No,
what do you think about
it? It's in my queue. I love them, though. It's fantastic. It's getting me very bullish on kind of AI. It's like crypto is so, I mean, that is the new frontier. And there's so much going on these days. You need like a dedicated weekly podcast just
like
to keep
early
up on the frontier
DeFi.
Of AI. Yeah,
it feels
it's amazing.
Like early DeFi just 4 years later. Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun with that. So definitely this is your call to action to not miss the AI meta. The AI meta is the meta to pay attention to for 2025. That is where the hot ball of money is going to go. It is where it currently is. And so I think it's going to attract outside retail capital like all bull markets do. And they are not yet here, but they're definitely coming and you are ahead of the curve. And that is why we are doing the AI roll-up so you can front run the opportunity. What do we always say on Bankless?
Yeah, every Thursday. Every Thursday.
Every Thursday. Comes out Thursday. Yeah, the day before the Friday weekly roll-up, which is just the normal news. All right. Meme of the week. Meme of the week. This one, I chuckled at this one. I don't even know I don't know what this meme is. I've seen it before. But this is a man who is looking at a picture of his younger self. The younger self is titled First Cycle Me. And then it's Second Cycle Me, thinking how stupid I used to be. So Second Cycle Me is looking at a picture of younger self. But then there's Third Cycle Me looking at a picture of Second Cycle Me looking at First Cycle Me, just looking at Second Cycle Me, reminded of how stupid I used to be. Which, Ryan, I don't know how you feel, but that is how I feel. Second Cycle Me was an idiot. Third Cycle Me is doing great.
Second Cycle You was an idiot, a complete idiot?
No. I was very, very smart, and then I was dumb. In that order.
And you're just like much older and wiser cycle.
That's right.
Imagine what you're going to be like. What kind of Zen state are you going to be? You're going to be Eric Voorhees in the fourth cycle because that guy's on like the fifth or sixth cycle, all right?
Yeah,
that's how you get to Voorhees level.
We're all just chasing Voorhees.
That's right. All right. Got to end with this. Of course, you guys know crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we're headed west. It's the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us in the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.